from deep inside your radio.
Just blew in. Man, that London traffic. From London, England, ladies and gentlemen, where the London traffic you would expect it to be, if anywhere. And it's a beautiful spring day. And my driver said, well, it's the sunshine and the demonstration, isn't it? I said, who's demonstrating? He said, oh, I don't know, they're not English. So I made it, though. Whew, man. And it's, I had no idea somebody planted magnolia trees in London. I had no idea there were magnolia trees in London, but this week they're blossoming. And it's enough to make you think there's something to this global warming deal. It's pretty cool. You know, blossoming magnolia trees first week in March. Yeah, baby. Hey, you know, we're the dumb ones in the audience. Our executives in the television business are so much smarter than us. Let's just concede that and move forward. Here's Sean McManus, president of CBS News, at the six-month mark of the Katie Couric experiment as the anchor of the CBS Evening News. Quote, I think in some ways we owed it to the industry to try new things. But we found at 6:30, with only 22 minutes of programming time, people basically want you to tell them what happened in the world that day. That's probably the biggest lesson we learned. Unquote. He's making how much? As the president of CBS News, to spend 6 months finding out that people want to tune in to the evening news to find out what happened that day. Sean McManus, ladies and gentlemen. Son of Jim McKay, by the way, the ABC sportscaster from the Olympics. Yes, the DNA does tend to thin out, doesn't it? I don't know if I'm happy or sad not to be in the home of the homeless this time around, because this from the Associated Press, officials have tried poison, gassing, and euthanasia to control a breeding frenzy among squirrels in a Santa Monica City park. Now they're going to try birth control. Under a new program starting this summer, squirrels in Palisades Park will be injected with an contraceptive vaccine to stunt their sexual development. We don't want to kill them if we don't have to, says Joe McGrath, the city's parks chief. I personally like squirrels. Uh-oh. But we also have to be receptive to the county's concerns. County health officials say the squirrels, there are about 1,000 of them in the park, pose a public health risk. They warn that the rodents are aggressive and may carry rabies or fleas that can spread disease, such as bubonic plague. That's right. You're going to get bubonic plague from the squirrels in Santa Monica. Since 1998, Santa Monica has been cited 5 times by L.A. County for squirrel overpopulation. But the suppression methods it's used, including euthanasia, have angered animal-loving activists. So it's the home of the homeless squirrels, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I mentioned last week that we're now kind of starting to get more news about our good friend Pakistan. And it's about time. Because it's such a wacky friend, you know? It's like a neighbor that's behind you every step of the way, but boy, he's borrowed a lot of stuff that used to be in your garage. Dateline Islamabad last Friday, Pakistan's President General, because he's both, Pervez Musharraf, has replaced the nation's Chief Justice of the Supreme Court for, quote, misuse of authority. He's been in the post for 2 years. No further details given on what he did wrong. Musharraf had supposedly received numerous complaints and serious allegations for misconduct, misuse of authority, and actions prejudicial to the dignity of the office. And the Chief Justice has been unable to give a satisfactory explanation. The report did not specify what he's accused of. That's from the Associated Press. A different version from a Pakistani newspaper says it should be understood as a coup at the Supreme Court. This is the first time in Pakistani history that a Supreme Court judge has been removed. At issue is whether Musharraf has the constitutional right to remove a judge. Supposedly he doesn't, says a Le Show correspondent living in Pakistan. Quoting the president of the Supreme Court Bar Association, it's a blatant attack on the independence of the judiciary. He was appointed, as I said, 2005, has campaigned to restore the integrity of the judiciary. Good luck, babe. He was perhaps too aggressive in taking up public complaints on human rights violations, disappearances blamed on security agencies, expensive weddings, and other causes with direct bearing on everyday life in Pakistan. He did leave himself open to attack by pulling strings to get his son hired as a prosecutor without the needed credentials. It's a democracy. President is, of course, the general. And American and NATO forces are taking the Afghan war into Pakistan, targeting pro-Taliban militants in a development that has caused friction with senior Pakistani officials. This according to the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Thank you, Harry, for the plug. Nothing to it, babe. They claim that the Pakistani officials claim the West's determination to capture Taliban and Al-Qaeda leaders threatens to shatter the controversial peace deal that had brought a breathing space for President Pervez. Battered army units in the North Waziristan tribal belt. You have one of those? They're very flattering, tribal belt. United States believes Pakistan's deal with the Taliban has allowed Al-Qaeda to regroup there. The question of whether Musharraf has given tacit consent for the U.S. strikes into Pakistan territory is highly sensitive. A journalist who claimed to have discovered proof that America was launching missiles inside Pakistan was kidnapped last year and found murdered in North Waziristan. I'll say that's controversial. And ladies and gentlemen, it's not just New Orleans. You probably know there's a wave of shootings and murders that have plagued the city since the beginning of the year. And so I've been amazed to come to London and find discussions at the dinner table about a wave of street crime featuring youngsters as young as 10, 11, 12, carrying guns, brazenly conducting holdups and other assaults on the streets of London. And equally amazed to see the reports back from the States this week that crime in major cities all across the United States is up. Violent crime, particularly aggravated assault. The crimes that often lead to murder if you don't get to the hospital fast enough. So it's not just New Orleans. But on the other hand, the law that covers emergencies, disasters in the United States. Yes, I know I've wallowed in this enough to know the name of the law. It's the Stafford Act. Says that when federal funds come in to help a disaster-plagued community, the locals in the state will put up 10% of the money just, you know, to have a stake in the game. But when they're really big disasters like 9/11 or Hurricane Andrew, the feds have immediately waived the 10% provision. It's been 18 months since New Orleans flooded. New Orleans legislators have been trying to get the feds to waive it for New Orleans. And now it appears, despite some efforts by Louisiana senators, that the Senate will not pass that waiver. So it's not just New Orleans, but it is just New Orleans. Hello, welcome to the show. From high above Leicester Square in London, England. Part of the United Kingdom, as it currently stands. But you never know. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, the new Iraq. Top aviation officials in Iraq will address key concerns on the business and upgrading of four of the country's international airports at the Iraq Aviation Electricity and Security Summit here in London at the end of this month. I can tell you one of the key concerns. We'll be there. We'll be so there. But if you want real information, you know, there's all these reports, General Petraeus says, well, you know, there's progress, but we'll need more troops. And now they're saying maybe longer than we were told, maybe more troops than we were told when the surge was introduced, maybe through next year, maybe longer, maybe like President Bush says, into the term of the next guy. That would be good. But if you really want to know what it's like, here's a straw in the wind. Dateline Dubai. The Iraqi trial judge who sentenced former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein to death is asking for asylum in Britain. Because it's so damn secure in Iraq? Because it's so damn warm in Britain. Al Jazeera Television's London correspondent says Rauf Abdel Rahman has asked for asylum after going to Britain with his family in mid-December on a visitor's visa. Well, it's the theater. Maybe he saw Mamma Mia. The information we have is that the judge sought asylum for reasons including that he fears for his own life. Ah, and the lives of family members, says the correspondent, quoting unnamed British sources. There was no immediate comment from British or Iraqi officials. I'd tell you something, wouldn't it? And, you know, while the United States is fulminating, the United States government, that is to say, over the Iranians and their alleged help for the Shiite insurgency, Senator Carl Levin asked Mike McConnell, one of our intelligence gurus, during a committee hearing about the source of support for the Sunnis in Iraq. And McConnell said, well, there's some flow to the Sunni side in terms of funding and weapons and recruits. And Levin said, and what countries are those weapons coming from? McConnell, weapons could come from a variety of countries. Syria is probably one of the major places. Levin, what countries other than Syria could either weapons or funding for the Sunni insurgents come from? McConnell, we lack clear evidence that it's definitely coming from any one particular government, but there are indications it could be from a variety of countries around Iraq and also from private donors. What other countries besides Syria? You said that there's evidence that weapons or money for weapons is coming from a number of countries. The one you singled out was Syria. What other countries? What I was attempting to say is that donors from other countries around the area, one would be inside Saudi Arabia, as an example. McConnell later elaborated he had no awareness at this point whether the Saudi government was directing the support of Sunni insurgents through private donors. Nor did he explain whether Saudi support was flowing to Iraqi insurgents of Sunni allegiance or to Al-Qaeda Iraq or to some combination. Saudi Arabia, he said, is not providing funding to the Sunnis, and the Saudi government was trying to halt the flow of private funds, but they still flow to some extent, he says. The Iraq Study Group said funding for the Sunni insurgents comes from private individuals within Saudi Arabia. And, you know, they have no association with the royal family. There's no connection there. So the new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, better than ever. Now, you know that Vice President Cheney's chief assistant, Scooter Libby, I believe the I is for Irving, but I'm not sure. But, you know, everybody calls him Scooter. Anyway, he was found guilty this week of four of the five charges, basically obstruction of justice type charges. You know, the usual type charges in Washington, by a jury, and which set off a flurry of speculation regarding the probability and the timing of a presidential pardon for Scooter Libby. The president, of course, is making a trip to Latin America. He was in Brazil. He's in Colombia, going to Guatemala and Mexico before he comes back. The trip was probably, you know, you don't schedule a trip at the time of the guilty verdict in a trial of a top administration official is likely to come out. That's just a happy accident. But other things may not be so happy, as one might discover from listening into a certain phone conversation.
Hello. Hola, Presidente Cuarenta y Uno. Hey, 43. Still south of the border? 41, I'm south of the mall, near as I can tell. Yeah. Heading for Colombia. Mm-hmm. Wanted to declare mission accomplished in the war on drugs, but the damn bureaucrats stopped me. Well, probably good thing, Sprout. Yeah, well, we had the banner printed up in Espanol and everything. Still, looks like a good trip.
Yeah.
Always a good idea to go to Latin America when things start looking squirrely in the rest of the world. Folks down there always happy for us to seem to be paying attention to them. You know, like kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even when they're not happy, it ends up helping. I mean, remember when Richard Nixon got in a little bit of trouble in Venezuela? It just made him more popular here.
Venezuela was bad back then, too.
You know what those countries are like down there. 43, they're good, they're bad, they're good again, you know. Not a Canada in the bunch.
Yeah, well, 41, I thought Vicente Fox was going to work hard to keep a lid on Mexico. Next thing I know, boom, he's out of office, and they're start talking that gringo talk again.
Sprout would say don't worry about it if the Chinese weren't nosing around down South America way big time. But given that intense level of investment activity by our Chinese friends, not a bad idea to do a quick lap around South America every half dozen years or so, no matter what.
Yeah. You know, I did have a reason to call you, aside from enjoying some bad-mouthing of my hosts. I need to pick apart your brain about this whole pardoning Libby deal.
Liddy needs a pardon now. He's got this radio career, it seems to be going.
Not Liddy. Libby.
Oh, sorry. Huh? Got my White House felons confused there for a moment. Guess you could call it a senior Republican moment.
Yeah. But now I really am in need of some mentorating on this thing because of your experience pardoning, who was it, Cap Weinberger out of his Iran-Contra thing?
Yeah, Cap. Elliot Abrams.
Oh, he's a good man, still working hard for us.
And three of the fellas from the company.
The agency?
The you know what.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Pardoned him on the day before Christmas of my last month in office. Thought that was a nice touch, a Christmas pardon.
Well, I'm going to end up signing an Easter pardon if the pressure from our friends on the right gets any heavier on this Libby thing. And, of course, El Vice Presidente would like me to pardon him yesterday, which, according to Al Gonzalez, is not physically possible. So,
all right, son, just calm down.
Oh, I'm calm. I'm on two of Condi's Ambiens right now.
Okay, then. Let's just review the pros and cons of the pardon the same way you'd review the pros and cons of any policy you'd be considering.
Okay, but usually around here, we really just consider the pros.
All right, just humor your old man and let's do it my way. So, the advantage of an early pardon.
Well, it's not exactly early. The man has already been convicted by a jury of his peons. You know, you pardoned Weinberger before he'd even gone to trial.
Know that.
Well,
talking about early in the context of your remaining time in office, the advantage is that you get the Cheney wing of the administration and its supporters out there back on board for the initiatives of your last 2 years, whatever those might be.
Yeah. Well,
you do have initiatives coming up, don't you, 43?
Sure, we've got comprehensive immigration reform. We got comprehensive Social Security reform. We got...
Mean that you've got stuff you actually want to try to get done.
Yeah, that too.
Okay.
Obviously, Mr. Libby's happy for an early pardon, since it removes any pressure on him to flip and sing to the prosecutors. Most important, it sends a message to the rest of your team that you'll stand behind them, no matter how many laws they may have to violate in following your policies. That's a big pro.
Yeah.
Might be the biggest pro.
Okay.
Cons.
Well, I know some ex-cons. I'm not sure.
Reasons against an early pardon, 43.
Yeah, that's what I was getting to.
Yeah.
Well, the Democrat leadership at Congress certainly going to have a firecracker up their hiney, pardon my French, if this happens.
Not your biggest base of support anyway, is it?
I know that. But this might let loose a whole new wave of poisonous partisanship that we can't control because we didn't start it.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Other cons?
Well, except for the Wall Street Journal and the Fox News, the media is going to jump on us. Fortunately, I don't read the media, but there are weaker folks in my office who do.
Yeah. Comes with the territory, Sprout. Got to break some eggs if you want to do anything in the kitchen besides staring at a bunch of unbroken eggs.
And, you know, there are folks around here who don't hesitate not to point out that when President Ford died a couple months back, the number one thing in his legacy was his pardon to Nixon.
Well, Sprout, that's the one advantage of having presided over a wildly unpopular war. You don't have to worry about your legacy being a pardon.
Yeah. That's true. For when I'm kind of getting the idea you're leaning towards the pro side.
Just helping your process, 43. The result is your problem.
My problem is that it's tough coming up with a nickname for a guy who's already called Scooter.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Well, 43, good luck on the rest of your trip. Don't let the people in Guatemala wallow in recriminations about what happened a couple of decades ago.
No, I won't, 41. We're just going to wallow in the good progress we're going to make now.
Yeah,
tell Mom I said, hola, mamacita.
Will do. You take care of yourself, 43.
Oh, that's my first priority, 41.
Yeah.
Adios.
Light up, light up your lazy blue eyes. Moon's up, night's up, taking the town by surprise. Nighttime, nighttime, day left an hour ago. City light time, must you get ready so slow? There are places to come from and places to go. Night in the city looks pretty to me. Night in the city looks fine. Music comes spilling out into the street. Colors go flashing in time. Take off those stay-at-home shoes. Break off, shake off, take off those stay-at-home blues. Stay away down to the crowds in the street. They go their way, looking for faces to greet. But we run 11 with no one to meet. Night in the city looks pretty to me. Night in the city looks fine. Music comes spilling out into the street. Colors go waltzing in time. Thank you.
hot nights up, taking the town by surprise. Nighttime, nighttime, day left an hour ago. City light time, must you get ready so slow? There are places to come from and places to go. Night in the city looks pretty to me. Night in the city looks fine. Music comes spilling out into the street. Colors go flashing in time.
This is Le Show, and now, the apologies of the week. Think of it.
We're so sorry.
Yeah, you can stop thinking. A spokesman for the NATO forces in the southern Afghanistan province of Kandahar, that's the Kandahar attitude we admire so much, has apologized for the killing of civilians during military operations. We obviously apologize for what we've done there, and we do get in touch with the families, says David Marsh, NATO spokesman. Community leaders in Kandahar told Al Jazeera that at least two innocent Afghans die every week when NATO forces mistake them for suicide bombers or Taliban fighters. The apology came 6 days after an airstrike north of Kabul killed nine members of the same family. We obviously apologize for what we've done, and we do get in touch with the families. There are chats with the families and individual nations who have been involved in the action, says Wing Commander David Marsh. We're doing everything I can, I believe, to try to stop this kind of activity from continuing, he said. Dateline Washington. I'm sure that's reassuring to the Afghans. Dateline Washington, and won some hearts and minds while they're at it. Dateline Washington, executives from three of the largest U.S. credit card issuers pledged this week to offer clearer information to consumers amid a grilling from lawmakers. Hey, they're holding hearings in Washington again? About a confusing array of fees and charges. And the chief executive of Chase Card Services, Richard Srednicki, apologized publicly to one customer who had been buried in thousands of dollars of penalizing credit card fees and charges. It was offered to Wesley Wanamaker, who told lawmakers how he had become mired in fees tied to his Chase credit card despite making regular payments. He charged $3,200 to his card for wedding purchases between 2001 and 2002, made no further purchases. Over the next 6 years, he paid Chase $6,300 as his fees and interest rates on the purchases spiked. But in February, he was sent a bill saying he still owed $4,400, which included more interest and fees. He contacted Congress, and Chase canceled his bill as congressional investigators took up his case. Dateline Philadelphia, Governor Ed Rendell is calling for a total house cleaning at the state's Student Financial Aid Agency, responding to a question about recent expenditures racked up by staff at the Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency. Rendell said, "We can't have the abuses that FIA has had for so long." A FIA staffer charged the agency for a $128 tuxedo rental. Another charged a $1,700 dinner tab at Mastro's Ocean Club in Scottsdale, Arizona, billed as a place where price doesn't matter. The president of FIA last week said the agency's lavish spending is going to stop. Dick Willie, it's a funny name in Britain, apologized for any lavish expenses and seemed taken aback by the scope of some of the expenditures. Dick Willie, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Weymouth, Mass., using the same intercom that got him into trouble, a student at the high school at Weymouth has apologized for suggesting that fans wear bulletproof vests to a basketball game in Roxbury. Student's name was not released. Dateline Greensboro, North Carolina, three college football players accused in an attack on Palestinian students have apologized. The victim's lawyer says they'll drop their complaint once the fourth player says he's sorry. Facing another withering controversy, Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick apologized this week for intervening in a financial deal involving an embattled mortgage lender, a mea culpa that came as a local Boston newspaper learned that the AmeriQuest official who requested his help was also a campaign donor. House Appropriations Committee Chairman David Obie berated a woman who approached him in a congressional corridor this week, claiming that idiot liberals, his quote, don't understand the war supplemental suspending process. OB later apologized about his outburst. I hate this war, he said. It's the worst foreign policy disaster in my lifetime. It's extremely frustrating when you see groups that cannot be united because they don't agree with each other on the timeline, or they don't agree 100%, Obi said, explaining why the outburst happened. I'm sorry that the frustration happened to erupt in that hall. I wish it hadn't, Obi concluded. Iran has apologized. No, to Azerbaijan for violation of airspace with helicopters, according to Deputy Foreign Minister Khalafov. This is, I guess, the Deputy Azerbaijani Foreign Minister. He said he delivered Azerbaijan's discontent to relevant bodies during his visit to Iran. Iranian helicopters violated Azerbaijan's airspace on February 22nd. There were plenty of apologies from army officials at the hearings, the multitude of hearings conducted so far, more to come, about the problems at Walter Reed. Apropos of which, those were problems with outpatients, military outpatients at Walter Reed Army Hospital. And as I say, many of the officials apologized serially, apologized at each hearing they went to, delivering almost literally the same apology word for word. But here on the front page, right here, in the front page of the London Sunday Times, veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan suffering flashbacks, trauma, and panic attacks are being told to wait 18 months or longer for treatment at the National Health Service. So it's the same thing wherever you go. Yep, paper fell. From Senator Pete Domenici, of Republican of New Mexico, a message from his office. I take this opportunity to comment directly on media statements by former U.S. Attorney for New Mexico, David Iglesias. This is about a phone call that Senator Domenici made to Iglesias to try to ask whether some prosecutions might be sped up. In retrospect, I regret making that call, and I apologize, says Senator Domenici. Coincidentally, McClatchy newspapers report that Karl Rove said when he was asked by the Republican Party chairman of New Mexico whether that U.S. Attorney Iglesias was going to be removed, Rove said over the holidays, he's gone. Yeah, there's no politics involved. Women's Wear Daily reports Jane magazine editor-in-chief Brandon Holly says the magazine has apologized to 53 young women who volunteered to be in an anonymous photo shoot of their breasts for inadvertently exposing their identities in an email. So, wait a minute. They're okay with their breasts being exposed, but not their identities. I see. While Iran was apologizing to Azerbaijan, the British consul apologized to the Iranians over the faulty use of the term Arabian Gulf instead of the now universally recognized Persian Gulf. The consul is the cultural arm of the British Foreign Office, and its political missions used the title Arabian Gulf in a newly published book, which it released for educational purposes. Guess not educational enough. Many Iranian officials and citizens protested. The organization's spokesman claimed the consul has corrected the false title in online editions of the book. An internet search revealed that it only omitted the false Arabian Gulf title without bringing the original name back. Iran's embassy in London protested, issuing a statement against the use of the term Arabian Gulf, and called on the consul to correct what has been wrongly done. Tut, tut, tut. Meanwhile, also on the internet, for those of you who think you can quote Wikipedia at will, following revelations that a high-ranking member of Wikipedia's bureaucracy used his cloak of anonymity to lie about being a professor of religion, the Free Internet Encyclopedia plans to ask contributors who claim such credentials to identify themselves. Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales said in interviews from Japan, yes, I know, it would have been so much better if Jimmy of Japan had been in Wales at the same time, that contributors would still be able to remain anonymous, but he said they should only be allowed to cite some professional expertise in a subject if those credentials have been verified. A Wikipedia contributor who wrote under the pen name SJ claimed to be a professor of theology turned out to be a 24-year-old college dropout. In a note on his Wikipedia user page, before it was officially retired, he apologized for any harm he caused Wikipedia. Quote, it was quite honestly my impression that it was well known that I was not who I claimed to be. Unquote. And Senator John McCain was the latest to apologize for not knowing about the poor conditions faced by injured soldiers at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. He's running for president. Total coincidence, ladies and gentlemen. It's all coincidence. The apologies of the week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I made reference earlier in the broadcast to the fact that we now may be surging longer and harder. Ooh, I'm getting excited. Dateline Washington, the day-to-day commander of American forces in Iraq has recommended that the heightened American troop levels there be maintained through February 2008. This was in the New York Times this week. The White House has never said exactly how long it intends the troop buildup to last. Military... The confidential assessment by the commander, Lieutenant General Raymond Odierno, reflects the military's new counterinsurgency doctrine, which puts a premium on sustained efforts to try to win over a wary population. It also stems from the complex logistics of deploying the five additional brigades. So that's General Odierno today. Might be interesting to track back on General Odierno. On June 18th of 2003, just as things were starting to heat up over there, he was commander of the 4th Infantry Division. He emphatically rejected the idea that he was facing an insurrection. Quote, "This is not guerrilla warfare," he told reporters that day. "It is not close to guerrilla warfare because it's not coordinated, it's not organized, and it's not led. The soldiers that are conducting these operations don't even have the willpower. We find that a majority of the time they'll fire a shot and they'll drop the weapon and they'll give up right away. They do not have the will, and in most cases I'm not sure they really believe in what they're doing." Unquote, General Odierno in June of 2003. But there's more. This is from interesting book called Fiasco by Thomas Ricks, military correspondent of the Washington Post. When the top Army intelligence officer in Iraq noticed that there were an awful lot of people being swept into Abu Ghraib, contributing to the overcrowding of Abu Ghraib, which was contributing to the understaffed place, treating them in an interesting manner, and she questioned specifically the 4th Infantry Division had a specifically indiscriminate approach to rounding up people, whether they were suspects or not, and dumping them in Abu Ghraib. She was told by an intelligence officer worked in the 4th Intelligence Division, Infantry Division, sorry, that Odierno didn't care. More about Odierno. General Odierno. In some instances, it appeared that U.S. commanders, in seeking to shut down the insurgency in their areas of operation, were using tactics that effectively made them recruiting sergeants for it. Retired Army Colonel Stuart Harrington, a veteran of Army counterinsurgency, who went over to look at the situation in late 2003, early 2004, was especially bothered by the actions of General Odierno's 4th Infantry Division, which was headquartered in Saddam Hussein's hometown of Tikrit. Principally due to sweep operations, the 4th ID was consistently singled out as the major offender. The number of detainees was rising steadily, sweeping up large numbers of people and dumping them at the door of Abu Ghraib. General Odierno, ladies and gentlemen, it's a guy you can trust. And now, news of the warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
And no, Odierno is not the name of a deodorant, as I surmised last week. Ladies and gentlemen, while the European Union calls for a 20% cut in carbon dioxide emissions by the countries of Europe in the next 20 years, a draft report prepared by the Bush administration admits that greenhouse gas emissions by the United States will rise by 2020 to 20% above levels in 2000. So Europe is offsetting us. Isn't that nice of them? The internal administration report has been obtained by the Associated Press, should have been handed to the United Nations more than a year ago. Oh, shoulda, as part of the world body's monitoring of climate change, but its publication has been delayed. And the Bush administration is ordering federal wildlife officials headed for international meetings on polar bears not to talk about how climate change and melting ice are affecting the imperiled animals. What, so the bears might overhear? It's the latest in a string of cases, according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, in this case, in which the administration has carefully controlled or even banned government employees' public speech about global warming. The latest chapter involves two memoranda written in late February that put strict limits on what Fish and Wildlife Service employees could discuss at meetings in Norway and Russia. The third memo says the policy applies for trips to those two nations as well as Canada and, quote, any northern country. Administration's officials say the memos were written to ensure that U.S. representatives wouldn't stray outside the agenda of meetings, which they say would be a violation of diplomatic protocol. That's all. It's just about protocol. Nothing else going on here. No, you know, show's over, folks. Go home. Ladies and gentlemen, Newt Gingrich was on Focus of the Family, the radio show run by James Reverend. Is he a reverend? Dr. James Dobson. Where Newt, who is rumored to be a candidate for president, might do, admitted he'd had an illicit affair with an aide in his congressional office. Timing, right about the time that he was leading the drive to impeach President Clinton for activities related to an illicit affair he was having. Newt denies any hypocrisy in the matter. And later, after the interview aired, Reverend Jerry Falwell sent a newsletter to his members, the members of his congregation, saying that he'd had a similar conversation with Newt Gingrich, where Newt had said that he had disappointed, fallen short of both his standards and God's. Interesting meeting that must have been.
Well, Speaker Gingrich, it's an honor and a pleasure as well as a blessing to have you here at Thomas Road Baptist Church, even if you're not in the sanctuary itself, but just in the pastor's study.
Well, as you know, Reverend Falwell, as I believe I told your assistant on the phone, I was fully intending to be at the service today, but I had a transformational book signing I had to attend, as well as a paradigm-shifting luncheon and fundraiser. So,
well, as I believe I have told you on more than one occasion, Speaker Gingrich, I feel as though, even though I'm part of the Southern Baptist tradition and you're of another tradition, we're parts of different limbs of the body of Christ. And so any aid I can give to my ecclesiastical brother is something I'm happy and blessed to do.
Well,
now, I understand you... Well, what is it you want?
Well... Reverend Falwell, I have to unburden myself. I've done things in my past, in my life, that I'm not proud of, that God's not proud of me for having done. And I thought if I could unburden myself to you, it might help me and you and God and all sorts of other folks.
Well, have you thought about doing this with your own clergyman, your own clergy person?
Oh, yes, I certainly have. I considered it very seriously. But to tell you the God's honest truth, Reverend Falwell, he does not have the... how should I... he doesn't have the mailing list that you do. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that to be able to burden myself to somebody with a great deal more reach would basically be...
Well, Newt, let's cut to the chase. What is it that you want to unburden yourself of? Because I have a taping.
All right. There was an adulterous affair, an illicit affair that I engaged in at the time of my late period of my speakership during the Clinton impeachment affair. There was my first wife says that I asked for divorce while she was on her hospital bed recovering from cancer, which I don't... I don't have a memory of, but I'm not in a position to say that she's not telling the truth. It's entirely possible that I've wiped the memory because God didn't want me to remember something that, you know, was potentially not what he would have wanted me to do.
So you want me to help you remember it? We don't practice hypnosis here, Speaker Gingrich.
No,
we,
I know. Yeah.
We do healings and miraculous other sorts of things. But
no, I just was looking for, I don't know if you offer absolution or some kind of forgiveness or something Christian that might, you know, be good for this situation.
Well, of course, only the Catholics have a sacrament of confession.
Well, of course.
We don't have that in our in our branch of Christianity, as you know, I'm sure,
yes.
Speaker Gingrich.
Yeah.
And forgiveness, of course, is in the hands of the Lord, between you and the Lord. But
so I was just thinking that it, you have the mailing list, and we've had this conversation, and you know how regretful I am about the lapses and how I've let you and myself and God down, and maybe just at some point to I don't know, violate the confidentiality of this meeting in a constructive manner would be useful.
I think I follow what you're trying to say, Speaker Gingrich, and at an appropriate time, I'd be prepared to vouch for the fact that this conversation took place.
Well, that's great.
We'd love to have you come visit us in the sanctuary just for...
Well, I'd love to do it, but I do have to call into Rush, and I'm due at Fox News at 2 p.m. for a commentary. So, I can't thank you enough, Reverend Falwell, and I'll pledge that the very next time I fall short of my standards and God's standards, I will actually pay a visit to the sanctuary.
Well, we're going to hold you to that, Speaker, now. Thanks for dropping by.
All right, bye-bye.
And now news from outside the bubble. Here's a guy with guts. He's in Australia. From the Age newspaper, air marshals on planes and more security guards for city buildings considered high terrorist targets have cost Australia millions and dragged productivity growth to below the average of Western nations, according to a leading Australian economist. Saul Eslake, chief economist at one of the country's largest banks, said Australia's productivity growth had fallen from above average 2.3% to about 1.5% since 9/11. He said a significant factor in the decline was the government's overreaction to the threat of terrorism. He said, this decade we've had a tidal wave of productivity-stifling regulation and legislation, most of it directed at enhancing national security. He said he was speaking in a personal capacity, not speaking for his bank. But it's impossible to determine the true cost of the economy of increased security measures. But he said growth in employment of security guards in the United States, classified as non-productive labor by economists, had increased 8 times faster than average employment growth. Don't listen for any American economist to say anything like that. And Dateline Mogadishu, barely 2 months after they were toppled by a U.S.-backed military operation, militant Islamist leaders and hundreds of fighters have returned to the country's capital and are quietly preparing to make a comeback. That didn't last long. In Washington, a U.S. official said the reporting by the McClatchy newspapers from Mogadishu is basically on the mark. He says the Islamist return is cause for concern. Why, there are regular Taliban out there. Civic leaders also confirmed the accounts about the Islamist fighters. Says a prominent secular peace activist, they have a lot of support. The reemergence would be another setback to the Bush administration's efforts to block the creation of an Islamist regime in the Horn of Africa. Yes, Africa does have the Horn. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. I have to get back into London traffic. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ 7.415 shortwave. Think of it. Available via the internet. Moving to a new century at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com on the mighty 104 in West, in Berlin, East and West, wherever you like it. Available on both Sirius and XM satellite radio. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'll be just like London not having either the weather or the demonstrators, if you'd agree to join with me next week. Would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks, and to Adrian Bodnam here at Capital Radio in Leicester Square, London, for helping to make today's show so irresistible. The show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, now more than ever, as the home of the homeless and the home of the birth-controlled squirrels. So long from Blighty.